Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt. Eric, this past weekend saw the beginning and completion of the 2019 NFL Draft. Lions held many selections. They held the eighth pick in the first round, and a tiny bit of surprise that opened up with tight end TJ Hockenson. We're going to get into that right now. A lot of people seemingly upset with this year's draft, a lot of people jubilant. I think I know what camp you're in. So let's just get going right away. Let's start with TJ Hockenson from Iowa, tight end, 6'5", 251 pounds.
Well, okay. Actually, I'll address that. The point you made that some people are happy and some people are not. You know, I think...
With every team, that's probably true.
Yeah, and I think the thing that gets lost sometimes is that we don't look at things as a whole, and we look at things and we break them down like every individual thing. And we think if we don't know what's going on at this particular spot, then it must not make sense. And if it doesn't make sense to us, then it's bad. And while I understand that, we also have to understand that there are people who it does make sense for, and that there are people that are more in the know than us that are making these decisions. And as we've seen with last year's draft, when Quinn is drafting players for this scheme, he knows the players that fit. And so while we don't know all these players, or maybe we don't see the same value because of the information that we read, or maybe we watch film or games or whatever, there's a national narrative and then there's a team-specific narrative, and those are very different. And the one thing that I think we need to get used to as a Lions fan base is that the national media is never going to give us good grades because, one,
they did too many times in the Millen era, and never will again.
But Millen drafted names. Millen drafted, like, high-profile players that he thought would make an impact, right? Whereas the Lions, they don't care. Okay. From a national media perspective, they are ranking players on how they fit most NFL schemes. The problem is that the Lions run a scheme that is off ordinary. And because of that, they're going to draft players that are going to be ranked a little bit lower because they're more scheme-specific players. And so these bigger profile names aren't always going to fit in Detroit. And when we look at like these national rankings, we have to understand that they're really not going to match up to the Lions board. The Lions board is going to have a whole different slew of players at totally different rankings with totally different values because the scheme that the Lions run is just so different, and it goes against the grain compared to most of the league. Right. And so, and we'll get into that as we go through a couple of these picks that some people will label as like busts or like reaches, whereas it makes sense for teams. And I'll try and explain why it makes sense for the Lions. All right. So start at Hockenson. I mean, realistically, this guy was the talk from what, December, right? Mm-hmm. We're talking about him, massive need, massive problem area. He helps them out in the run game. He can help them out in the passing game. He is a guy who can fill multiple needs for this team in the direction that they were heading, could fill a weakness. And, there's just so many assets that he brought, and he's a very safe player. Now, there's an argument to be made that the value of taking a tight end in the top 10 isn't there. And I get that. And I understand some people aren't happy about the pick or the value of taking a tight end in that. And I'm not going to argue that with you. If you want to argue that the value wasn't there, that's fine. I get that. But the bottom line is, no matter how he got here, he's on the team, right? That was one of the things with, like, Ebron. Everyone always blamed Ebron for being a top 10 pick. That wasn't Ebron's fault. That was Mayhew's fault, right? And so the same thing, we need to keep this in mind with our approach with Hockenson. It's not his fault he was picked in the top 10. And we need to just look at what
it doesn't work out, we have to hold Quinn responsible.
Well, honestly, yeah, because he's the one who took him at 8, right? And that's true. So if you want to argue that the value wasn't there, that's fine. I'm not going to argue that. But from a player standpoint, what he brings to the team is going to be very dynamic, and he's going to fill a lot of needs. Sorry, so he's 6'5", 250, right? On Lance Zierlein's board, who runs NFL.com, he was the fifth best player overall. Dane Brugler, who is probably the guy I respect the most in the draft community, he was the sixth best player overall. The Draft Network guys, I'm sure most of us are familiar with them, well, he was the eighth best player overall on their collective board. The talent level says he's worth the eighth overall pick. If you want to, again, the position, that's a different story. But from a talent perspective, he's valuable. He's arguably the best skill player in this draft. He's the best offensive. He was drafted basically as the best offensive player in this draft, right outside of the quarterbacks, which they weren't going to take, right? But
Jones and Murray.
So you're not taking a quarterback, so it's not going to be one of those guys. They got the best offensive player in this draft, right? And so outside of the quarterback, of course. But so what does he bring? Like, what makes him worthy of this pick? What makes him such a dynamic player is he's an above-average athlete. I know people think Ebron was this dynamic, like, athlete who could do all these things. And Ebron's overall athletic score is significantly lower than Hockenson's. Hockenson is actually very underrated in his athleticism. It doesn't always translate to the field, but the elements of it are there. He has the ability to line up in line, which means he's going to help out in a lot of different base sets. He can also line up in the slot where he can be a matchup problem. He has very natural hands. He's a soft hands catcher, right? He was a receiver in high school, and so he entered Iowa without ever really blocking before, and then he had to develop that part of his game. And then while most people look at him and say he's at that elite blocker range for a college player, there's still some areas that need to be improved at the NFL level. But he has functional strength. I mean, he has strength for days, right? And there's some technique things that can happen, and some balance and some patience that can be added to him. But the foundation is there. And what makes him really unique is these things are very natural to him. It's not – he has the ability to learn, but there are some just natural elements to his game that you can't teach. And catching is one of these. And so – like when he runs his routes, and again, the routes are pretty solid, but they're defining, they're still developing. He's able to be smooth in and out of them, but he also finds ways to create separation that, again, are just, there's a natural element to it that allows him to create separation. For example, there's a really good clip online that Twitter has probably blasted a million times, where he's basically running like a 10-yard curl, where he's curling over across the field. And that's a common thing that he's going to be asked to run. But what happens is when he reaches the top of his route and he begins his curl, the safety closes. And when the safety closes on him, if he continues his curl, the safety's momentum will allow the safety to carry with him across the formation, and he'll be covered. But what he does is when the safety closes, he does what's called like a stem, where he stems upfield just a little bit, like 2 yards. And when he starts to go back upfield instead of across, it forces the safety to throttle down. And then he begins his arc back across again. And when he begins that arc back across, the safety, who is now throttled down, now has to reaccelerate. And now Hockenson doesn't. And that allows Hockenson to get some separation. There's very natural things like that he does in his route running that not a lot of tight ends do. These are things that you need to be taught, but he does it just as just part of his natural game. He has good moves that help him get off the line. He has rip moves. He has chop moves that help him get separation if someone tries to press him. And so there's all these neat things that he does that, for a kid who's not even 22 years old, it really shows you where the ceiling can be. He can have a really high ceiling. His intelligence, it goes along with that. He's a very intelligent player. He's hard-nosed. He's willing to put his nose into it. He's been very efficient in his time at Iowa. He only played there for 2 years because he's a redshirt sophomore, but he started both years. And in those 2 years, he became the second most efficient tight end in Iowa history behind only Dallas Clark. And when you think about that, like George Kittle's in the league and he's succeeding from Iowa. His tight end partner, Noah Fant, went at 20th overall. He's up there. But Hockenson was the guy who they went to and when they needed to get things done. One of the things that Quinn talked about was that when it was a critical situation, third down, red zone, something, Hockenson was the guy that Iowa trusted to get it done, and that's what was very appealing to the Lions. So when you look at his statistics, he has the fifth best completion percentage when targeted amongst the tight ends in this class. He has the fifth most yards per catch. He has the third best yards per route run, second best drop rate, and he's the third best blocker per PFF. All of those things in all of those categories, he's in the top five. Like he's the only one that's in the top five in all of those categories. And so that's one of the reasons why he goes overall. goes so high overall. He's not Rob Gronkowski. I think people need to get that out of their heads. And he's probably not even he's not even stylistically the same as George Kittle. My comp for him is Jason Witten. And if you drafted Jason Witten in this draft, that's a good draft. You know what I mean? That's a good first pick. You know, what do you think about that?
Well, where I'm wrong. I don't know. See, because if we went back in time, found Jason Witten's draft, this was a long time ago. Oh, I can't think of who else he was drafted around. Yeah. Do you really think he was worth the eighth overall pick in that draft?
No, again, I
that's not even the big deal. Like, I'm in your boat where I'm not going to argue that they picked him, which it's fine. You know, eighth overall pick, you pointed out that the scouts liked him that much, and it seemed that most teams were on board with that information. The one thing I do, the only thing I worry about with this pick is that Matthew Stafford traditionally doesn't throw to tight ends. Now, I know the scheme is a change in, and he's got a new offensive coordinator, and sometimes he handles that well, sometimes he doesn't. But over the last 10 years, where he's been the quarterback of the team, he had 1 year where Joseph Fourier caught 7 touchdown passes, and he had 1 year where Ebron had a little over 800 yards receiving. And other than that, he's not a guy that uses a tight end extensively. Mm-hmm. And another thing that we have to worry about as Lions fans, worry is not the right word, but he's a rookie, and rookie tight ends usually don't explode out onto the
scene.
So there's going to be some growing pains, and we'll live through that, I would assume.
The two things that I would want to say about that is one, I agree with you with the fact that from a statistical standpoint, I'm not expecting him to have a breakout season because at best, he's the third target in this offense, right? At best. They're going to run a lot of 12 personnel. Okay, so
one back, two tight ends.
In the past, with all those other tight ends that you mentioned, they always ran 11 personnel, which means they only had one tight end, and then that tight end was the fourth option. Well, right off the bat, he's going to be moved up a peg into that third spot instead of that four. So I do expect him to get more targets, but I also expect those targets to still – we need to temper our expectations as well because we still have Jesse James. They paid money to bring him in, and they gave him a long-term deal for a reason. And I think a lot of that is to help Hockenson transition. But he might get 50 or 60 targets this year, and that might be it. You know what I mean? Like he might catch 50 passes at best. I'm probably more like 40 passes. And if you're catching 40 passes,
that's 2 per game, 2.5 per game.
Yeah, right.
If you're talking
about maybe 40 yards and maybe at best 6 touchdowns. So we're talking like 40 catches, 500 yards, and 6 touchdowns. That's realistic expectation for him. And while people are going to look at that and say, that's not enough, what I think we have – the counter to that is he's also going to be a massive part of this run game. And that's really where their focus is. And they want to improve the run game as best they can. And he's going to help in that area. And that's an area that statistically isn't recognized. So – a lot of people are going to be looking at the PFF scores and run block grades and stuff like that in order to help them understand if this pick is really worth it.
All right, moving on to the second round. Jelani Tavai, a linebacker from the University of Hawaii, 6'2", 250 pounds.
So this is the prototypical.
No, He's the lightning rod of this draft.
But this is the prototypical linebacker that they're looking for, right? And we've talked about all these different concepts of guys and how they fit. And the biggest weakness that I've had is trying to figure out which linebackers fit the scheme for the Lions. And apparently, this is it. All right? So let me just throw out all the good stuff about him, and we'll talk about what happens in all that stuff a little bit. But so he's a 4-year starter, he's a captain, and he was invited to the Senior Bowl. Those three things are things that Quinn looks for in almost all of the players. You're going to see at least one of those or multiple of those three things: captain, multi-year starter, Senior Bowl. We talked about him fitting. You said 250 pounds. His wingspan, though, and that's another theme with these front seven defenders, they need to have this large wingspan. He has a 78-inch wingspan. For a 6'2.5 guy, that's massive. He's played Mike, so he's going to have a lot of that's the same spot as Jared Davis. But he also was on the edge, and we also saw him drop into coverage. So in Quinn's mind, his ability to do those three things makes him potentially a three-down linebacker, which means Christian Jones is probably going to be the guy who ends up being the odd man out. He was productive. He had over 10 tackles a game, averaged over 10 tackles a game over his career. Very strong against the run, very strong at setting the edge. Another two things that are very key in this scheme. It's physical, very violent hands. He can chop, he can rip, he can hit gaps, he can get through gaps, he can get off blocks. Very intelligent, he uses his vision well, tracks the ball, locates, and he can chase. And when he chases and gets people, he tries to put them in the ground. You know, there's some linebackers that can do it and some linebackers that can't. He can. He's good at his gaps. He knows where the ball's going a lot of times, like I said, with his vision. He's got 41 tackles for loss in his career. That's pretty impressive for a linebacker. For a 250-pound guy, you wouldn't think he would be very fluid in coverage, but he's more fluid than what you would think. He's better in man coverage than zone, which is actually plays as another key component into this scheme, is they're going to ask him to play more man. If he gets in zone, he's not quite quick enough to operate in zone where he's going to be like a click and close type of guy. He's better off being able to put a guy in his hip pocket and run with them. What else? Let's see. Now, he was arrested for third-degree assault. And we always talk about character guys. Have you read up on this issue?
Allegedly he was breaking up a fight. Wasn't he getting in the middle of something?
He was at a club with his best friend, and I don't know if it was his fiance or his friend's fiance, but some drunk guy came up and shoved her to the ground, and he then defended that woman and punched the guy. Got arrested for third-degree assault. Was suspended one game. The Lions asked him about it, said they have a non-issue with it. I tend to believe that's a legitimate non-issue. Everything I heard ahead of time about this assault was that, you know what, he's coming to the defense of a female. He wasn't going out there and picking a fight. So, again, I think that's a non-issue. They said it was a non-issue. He gets comparisons to Anthony Walker, who's the Colts Mike linebacker. But realistically, in my mind, he's going to play the Dont'a Hightower role in this scheme. And one of the things that was missing from this scheme and this linebacker set is they didn't have, like, okay, to understand, like, where he fits in, you have to understand how this scheme works. And the Patriots are the best example, right? They have Van Noy, who's a guy who rushes off the edge. Well, that's Kennard. Then they have a middle linebacker, and then they have Hightower. Hightower is their guy who roams and can rush. Now, if they were to have drafted, let's say, Devin Bush in the first round, it would have been a very natural move over for Jared Davis to fall into this Hightower role. And it's still possible that he could if Tavai can prove to be a better cover guy than Davis. But basically what they've done is they've added another guy who, like Jared Davis, can rush the passer, but also have other things that they can do. And it'll allow them to operate more in this multiple scheme that they want. Essentially now, if they believe Tavai is a starter, they believe Jared Davis is a starter, they believe Christian Jones is a starter, they believe Kennard is a starter. That's four linebackers. That'll allow them to play a 3-4. But their base is a 3-3, which means they can rest one of those guys, or now they can rotate one of those guys. And now they have four linebackers who they believe can start and only in three spots, which will keep guys fresh and keep things multiple. They have the same thing up front with Ashawn, Hand, Harrison, and Flowers. Three spots, four guys, rotate them through, and everybody's fresh, and they can do a lot of different things. So now you have eight guys for the front six spots that can all start. This is how your defense becomes truly multiple. And that's why I think he was such a key addition, and why adding a linebacker like him, or if they would have, you know, got a different guy, but this guy specific, this is who they got, he makes them multiple.
Would you expect to see him get a lot of playing time this season?
The more I read up on him, the more I am expecting him to beat out Christian Jones in a lot of ways. Christian Jones is limited to the two Mike spots, which is Will, the two off the ball spots, which mm-hmm. is Mike and Will.
Mike and Will.
But Jared Davis and Tavai are both guys who can drop and blitz, whereas Kennard is a blitz guy who will rarely drop. Christian Jones and Kennard have very specific roles. Davis and Tavai are guys that can do both aspects, and that really makes them valuable players.
All right, moving on to the third round, Will Harris from Boston College. He's safety, 6'1", 207 pounds. Paul Pasqualoni knows him well.
Yeah, right, and Paul, I'm sure, was really involved in this. He's a captain, 3.5-year starter, and was a Senior Bowl participant. So, again, another theme of these day two guys. He played field safety at Boston College. He'll be slotted in on the strong side in Detroit, which means he'll take one of those safety roles, but he'll probably be competing with Tavon Wilson in that third safety spot, where he'll be a guy who lives more in the box, but has the ability to drop into coverage. He's better at covering tight ends than Tavon Wilson is. He likes to hit, but he's not like a body snatcher like Diggs is, right? But he likes to throw his head in there and mix things up. He's another elite athlete. He's actually so elite of an athlete that he is a full quib qualifier at safety and corner. And one of the things that makes him good is that he can be a press coverage guy. So there's going to be times where I wouldn't be surprised if they float out Walker, Diggs, and Harris, and then they shift Harris into a cornerback-type role rather than just a safety-type role. Good three-cone score. That helps him. He plays up to that speed. He also plays under control. A lot of times when you get guys that play fast, they get a little bit wild. He doesn't do that. He can cover different spots of the field. Again, he's better in man than zone, so another theme here. Again, strong against the run. He's able to hit people, but he stays healthy because he does it intelligently. That intelligence carries over to other aspects. One of the flaws, though, that is he's more of a reaction guy than an anticipator. So what that means is he's not a guy who's breaking up passes, but instead he's a guy who is allowing the catch in front of him and then making the tackle and not allowing any yak. So he's not a guy that you're going to drop into like that single high safety role. You might not even use him at weak safety, which is where I kind of like Tracy Walker, but he has a role where he's going to live in that linebacker level or maybe a bit behind it, and you can allow him to cover tight ends, and he should do well. Another underrated aspect is he is a day one special team starter, and he's probably going to thrive there. So a lot of potential here. He could be a guy who maybe doesn't take the starting job from Wilson early, but coming out of the bye, he could be your starter.
All right, moving on to the fourth round, Austin Bryant from Clemson, the fourth of the Clemson defensive linemen taken. He plays the edge position, 6'4", 271.
And almost 35-inch arms, like just gangly arms. Like he's almost all arms. It's crazy. Another captain, another multi-year starter, and another Senior Bowl invite. Again, a theme of the last three guys, right? Tore his right pec in November, played through the injury, required surgery after that, which hindered his draft process. I played left defensive end at Clemson, but so that means he rushed from the dirt He rushed with his hand in the dirt, but he also rushed from a standing position. In my opinion, he is much better off the ball. And because he's much better off the ball and standing, I think he is better suited for the jack position than he is for the down defensive end. Now, Quinn said he's expecting him to play jack, down defensive end, and even situationally pass inside. But despite his length, he doesn't have a lot of strength. And without that strength, he doesn't get off blocks easily. He's much better when you allow him to stand up where he can use his quickness to avoid the block rather than a guy who can engage and then disengage. He's not super athletic, but he's really suited for this jack role in a lot better than I think people think. And I know 271 pounds as a linebacker seems a little bit unusual, but it's not unusual for this scheme. Hightower's 265, right, in New England, and then they've used guys in the 270s before. So I think they're going to stand him up and they're going to back up Kennard, and he's going to be a situational pass rusher right now. Like I said, good first step, high effort guy, plays through the whistle, knows how to use his length. But his big thing is he needs to learn some more functional power. And that's something that he can do. And if he does, he'll be a lot closer to a complete player. And you won't think he should have been a guy who went in the fourth round if he develops that strength, though.
All right. Moving on to the fifth round, we have Penn State cornerback Amani Oruwariye. This is a guy we talked about in our quib discussion about the defense. Mm-hmm. 6'1", 3¾, 205 pounds.
And he was my fourth corner, and he was other people's number ones, and he was a little bit lower on a couple other boards, but he was up there pretty high. PFF had him as their number 36 player overall. Draft Network had him as number 29 player overall. Even Brugler and Zierlein saw him as third rounders, even though he wasn't as high up as. But the Lions got him in the fifth round, which seems like value across the board, no matter which way you look at it. He wasn't a captain. He wasn't invited to the Senior Bowl, though. And he was actually only a one-year starter, not a multi-year. But like I said, you can kind of overlook a couple of these other trends here when you're getting into these fifth-round picks. He understands his length. He's really long. He's really tall. He's really physical, mentally tough. If he makes a mistake, it doesn't linger. He's a good playmaker on the ball. He 28 pass breakups and 7 picks in his last two seasons. He'll do real well in press coverage, but he needs to be able to win in press coverage. If he wins at the line, then he'll own the route. But if he gets beat on the route, he doesn't have that initial burst to make up the speed. And that's a key for him is, you know, a lot of the corners on the Lions all have a 10-yard split in the 1.5s. His is a 1.63. And that speaks to this fault, I guess, that he has is that he has this length and range and physicality. But if he gets beat, he really has to work to get back into the route. And that's really where his biggest flaw is. If you can keep him in a back pedal, that's fine. He does good there, strong back pedal, and he can turn and run. He's got 4.47 speed. So, he's good in the route. He's good out of the route. And again, another characteristic of all these guys, he's strong against the run. So, in my mind, I think he competes for a starting role right away. He probably won't beat Melvin. He won't be starting, to start training camp by any means. I wouldn't be surprised if he ends training camp as the starter or maybe after the bye ends up being the starter.
All right, moving on to the first of the two sixth-round draft picks, Travis Fulgham, wide receiver from Justin Verlander's school, Old Dominion, 6'2½", 215 pounds.
You know, and there were four, no, five. There were four. I have to check it up. There were either four or five full quib wide receivers that were drafted. He was one of them.
A.J. Brown, Miles Boykin, Stanley Morgan Jr., and Travis Fulgham.
He ran a 4.58 40, which is a little bit slow, but that's right in range with some of the other receivers on the Lions. But he excels in the other areas. He's a former basketball player, so no surprise he passes the jump scores easily. But his height to pass the agility scores is very impressive. His biggest, he's a three-year starter, Senior Bowl invite again. He played wide receiver Z in college, but in my opinion, he'll play the X, which is Marvin Jones's role. He'll be a possession receiver. Now, when I describe him, let me see if he sounds like somebody on the Lions. His separation is a big issue, but he wins by using strength, size, and the ability to high point the ball. He has reliable hands and ball skills. He can make the adjustment towards the ball in route or in air. He's comfortable in traffic, but he struggles to be able to separate from corners. If that doesn't sound like Marvin Jones, I don't know what does. Like, he has so many of these Marvin Jones traits.
Now, a little bit bigger than Marvin Jones.
And he's an incredible run blocker. I mean, incredible. One of the best in the draft. And that is a key for him getting on the field, in my opinion. Right off the bat, knowing this kid, what he can do, and knowing his background, he's my wide receiver 4 on this team. Because he can block, and that is a huge trait. Now, I know Brandon Powell's a big fan, has his fans out there, and they signed Tommy Lee Lewis, and people who love slot corners. Fulgham is a guy who's going to find the field before them because he can block, and he can high point the ball, and he can be a weapon. Don't sleep on this kid. I know he's a 6th-round pick, but he should be a guaranteed roster guy, and he should find snaps a lot earlier than some of the other 6th and 7th round guys.
All right, talking about snaps for other 6th-round guys, we got Ty Johnson, running back from Maryland. He's 5'10 3/4", 210 pounds. He also had he averaged 7 yards per carry on the season, something like that.
Yeah, he's a 3-year starter, but he was never like a bell cow. He was always a guy who was used kind of situationally. What's that?
Red flag.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. I mean, and if you look at his stats, they went down each year. Now, he was injured this year, so that was, of course, no surprise it went down. He didn't get invited to the Combine or the Senior Bowl, but he went to the East-West game. He was on his way to being a full qualifier. He passed the speed scores, the jump scores, but he didn't do agilities. And because he didn't do agilities, he has an incomplete quib. Like I said, 3-year starter, and he was kick returner, and that's big. Now, kick returner is a key thing that they're missing. Now, they have Agnew as a punt returner, but they don't have a kick returner that they can rely on, and he can bring that element to the game. In his past 2 seasons, he has returned a kick for a touchdown in both of them, one of them against Michigan and one of them against Ohio State. So it's not like he's just like running them back against, Old Dominion. He's running them back against like the some top Big Ten schools here, and he's efficient doing it. Now, burst is his friend. He has great burst, great explosion, but average strength. He's not a guy who's going to run it between the tackles. He's better on the outside. I wasn't rarely used in the passing game, but really none of Maryland's running backs are. So we don't know if it's a scheme issue or if it's an issue with him. But if he can't catch the ball and he's not strong enough to pass block, then he won't be used on 3rd downs. And if he's not used on 3rd downs, then he's only used as a speed option. And if he's only a speed option and he's a kick returner, then maybe he can find his way on the roster. But really the key for him is to show an element that he didn't show in college, and that's that he can be a 3rd down guy. If he can be a 3rd down guy, then he's going to find his way onto the roster. He's going to find snaps. He's going to – and really we've talked about this all offseason. That 4.4 speed is something that isn't – on this roster anywhere else, and it's something they desperately need. They need a guy who can hit a home run, and he can do that. They just I'm hoping that he can show more big playability and more hands to help him take that next step.
All right, moving on to the 7th round picks. First, the surprise, taking a 2nd tight end, Isaac Nauta from Georgia. He's 6'3 1/4", 244 pounds.
Is it Nauta or Nauta?
Maybe it's Nauta.
Oh, I
think I just massacred it.
I'm always lazy, and I always take the short route. No. I just called him Nauta. I'm probably wrong. I'm usually wrong. But he's a true junior. He came out as a junior. But he started all 3 years at Georgia. He's an inline guy who has the potential to line up as an H-back. He's a little bit shorter, so he's just over 6'3". So H-back is a very natural thing for him to happen. He bombed the combine. And when I say bombed it, he was a guy people were talking about as a second round player based on film. And then he ends up going in the seventh round because he is, his testing was just horrific.
4.9 240.
Yeah, just terrible testing, right? And, but the thing is you can overlook that in the seventh round, especially when you get a guy that's productive as he is. Now, I mentioned Hockenson's numbers at the top. Let me tell you Isaac Nauta's numbers here. 86% completion percentage when thrown his way. That's second in the class. It was also second in the class in yards per target and seventh in the class in yards per route run, third in the class in drops, and second in the class in pass blocking. The only two players in the entire tight end class that finished in the top seven in those five categories are Nauta and Hockenson. Hockenson finished in the top five in all those categories, and that one little seventh that he has in yards per route run for Nauta makes him – these are the two most efficient production number tight ends in this whole class. I mean, they really are. And that's really why he's worth a flyer in the seventh round. Incredibly productive. Now, what does that mean at the next level? Well, you saw his natural hands as a receiver, and maybe he's not going to be a guy who stretches the seam like Hockenson, but he's a guy who's going to live in that 5 to 10 yard range. He's a guy who's a chain mover. If you throw a pass at this guy and you're completing it 86% of the time, and you need 3 yards, you can run him out, throw him the ball, and count on him catching the ball, and then you move the chains. That's what he brings you. He also brings you the ability to be a better run defense, where you can now run maybe 13 personnel or 23 personnel and put him on the field as your third tight end, and now your blocking has improved. You can shift him into an H-back position so that you're not tipping your hand if you put Bowden on the field. Now you can do this with him. Honestly, he could be the third tight end. Like, easily. Right now, Michael Roberts is in that role for me. He could jump Michael Roberts. And that's hard for me to say, being a Michael Roberts fan. But he can do some of the things that Roberts can. And while Roberts is better at getting out into the field, they don't really need that with Hockenson and James now. And so I would not be surprised if Nauta ends up being the tight end three on this team just because of the things he brings to the table. He's not going to be a guy you draft in fantasy, but he's going to be a third down weapon that is going to be able to help you in a lot of different ways. And skills and athletic testing be damned, he'll be a guy you could play for, you know, 10 years just because he is a great blocker and he is comfortable being that third tight end.
All right, the final pick of the draft, the ninth player, not the final pick of the entire draft, Lions' final pick, their second, seventh-round draft pick, P.J. Johnson, nose tackle, Arizona, my favorite pick. He's 6'3.5", 323 pounds, just because he's giant.
What a great story, too. Like, if you've read in the background on him, he had such a troubled upbringing, and he was part of drive-by shootings, and his family helped him stay out of the gang life and got him into football, and you know, he gets into football and he's finding success, and then he gets injured, and then he has his appendix burst and he gets infected, and just obstacle after obstacle after obstacle for this kid, and he just overcomes and overcomes and overcomes. He only played 1 year at Arizona, and the rest of it was at a junior college. But he declared as a junior because he has two kids at home and he wants to do better for them. And that's his goal, right? And so he's overcoming these obstacles in his own life. He's trying to make a better life for his kids. He's incredibly highly motivated to succeed. He is a nose tackle, but he also played five technique in Arizona's 3-4 scheme. Quinn said he could play defensive tackle as well, which would be like the three technique. So he can, right off the bat, they think he can play multiple spots, which is rare. His chief competition is going to be John Atkins. John Atkins is a nose tackle only. Like, that's all John Atkins does. If he can do more than that, he's going to be John Atkins. He's going to make this roster, right? And there's so much to like about this kid. He's low. He's tall, but he can stay low. He understands how to explode. He can leverage. If he doesn't win with his first step as a pass rusher, he won't win. Like, he just doesn't have counter moves. But He's pretty good against the run. He can anchor. He's got very quick hands and very quick feet, but the rest of his body's slow. So it's kind of unusual in that aspect. So there's a lot to like about him. There's a lot of potential. I would not be surprised if he ends up being the fourth interior defensive tackle behind Harrison Robinson and Deshaun Hand.
All right, that's it for all the draft picks. Let's move on to the undrafted free agents. There's a bevy of them.
We'll try and blow through these guys quick.
Well, we'll blow through them. I'm going to list off all the offensive players first. You'll pick out one or two that, and I think it'll be the offensive lineman. First, right tackle Ryan Pope from San Diego State, 6'7", 320. Ben Schaul, right guard from Wisconsin, 6'6", 309 pounds. Donald Parham, tight end from Stetson, which is in Florida, 6'8", 243. John Duart, wide receiver, Old Dominion, Fulgham's running buddy, 6'3", 210. Andre Wilson, a slot receiver, 5'10", 180 pounds. Nate Becker, another tight end from Miami of Ohio, 6'3½, 264. Micah St. Andrew, the right guard from Fresno State, 6'2½, 323. And that's it on the offense. Yeah.
So Pope is the most interesting because they guaranteed him $140,000. That is a huge amount of money. Last year, Brandon Powell got $40,000, and that was the highest amongst – 40 or 45. That was the highest amongst the Lions draft class. He got almost $100,000 more than that. He's going to make this team. Like, I mean, you don't pay that money to a guy if you don't think he's going to make this team, right? And I know it's in the grand scheme of the NFL, it's really chump change. But that's a lot of money to throw at this kid. Now, he's probably going to be a right tackle, which means he's probably going to supplant Andrew Donnell. Depending on what you're doing with Tyrell Crosby, Donnell could still be on the roster if Crosby shifts inside. But if not, Donnell might be gone. Donnell got, to put it in perspective, Donnell got re-signed this year to a one-year contract, got $15,000 guaranteed. This guy got $140,000, right? So
maybe they just put another zero on there and accident.
Maybe, but it's huge money for this kid. Now, he played at San Diego State. That's where Bowden played, right? Yep. He had a great 2017. They really liked Rashad Penny. This kid, they have to love the potential here or they're not going to throw that money around. All right. So I have Ben is going to kill me.
Ben Schaul, my guess. Right? Okay. Just because all Wisconsin offensive linemen have to end up in the NFL.
And he's really efficient run right guard, really good in run technique, excellent run blocker. But he doesn't win with power. He wins with technique. And so there's a balance there. It's if his technique can't be developed and he lacks the natural athleticism, can he really win the job? That's the big question. The technique is solid, and that's going to put him in play in competition for the right guard spot. But I'm not anointing him anything. Like, he could be right now, he's the fourth right guard if you consider Crosby a right guard. He has some work to do. He's behind Wiggins and Ibushi for me. But the potential's there. The technique is fantastic. And you don't start at Wisconsin for 4 years unless you're good. So the potential's there, but he's got a lot to prove. Parham's really –
I was going to ask if the rest are just camp fodder.
Parham's the guy I want to talk about, the rest are. 6'8", glorified wide receiver. He's a move tight end. If you like Logan Thomas and you're like, hey, Eric, why you talk about Hawkinson and James and Roberts and now to – what about Logan Thomas? Well, I'll tell you what. Parham is Logan Thomas but bigger. He's a move tight end at 6'8". He's basically a glorified receiver, and he's a matchup nightmare. He's a guy who probably – the depth is too hard for him to crack the roster, but he could land on a practice squad pretty easily.
All right, defensive players, Malik Kearney, a Jack linebacker from North Carolina, 6'2", 251. Trey Watson, the Mike linebacker for Clemson, so another Clemson guy, 6'3½, 253. And Ray Smith, defensive tackle from Boston College, 6'1", 302. I think also played linebacker for the Washington Sentinels in the movie The Replacements. And Matt Nelson, defensive tackle from Iowa, 6'7", 296. And there's one more, Josh Miller, cornerback from Ball State, 5'10½, 186.
My big guy's Malik Kearney, right? Kearney is a guy who was recruited as a linebacker, switched to a rush end, and started at rush end for 3 years for North Carolina, and all 3 years led the team in sacks. He is going to be a Jack linebacker, and he is probably going to slot right in behind Kennard and Bryant. I think he's probably going to jump ahead of Garrett Dooley, and he's going to be a guy who, at minimum, should make the practice squad and could be a sneaky pick to jump into the roster if he has good special teams. Hits that 250-pound mark, which they are looking for with these linebackers, and he just has so many of these intangibles. Even though he played rush end, he was really good in coverage and he showed some off the ball linebacker skills. He's the guy who I really like out of this defensive group. Trey Watson, I don't think is going to make it, even though he went to Clemson. I don't think that's part of it. The Boston College kid, Ray Smith, is kind of interesting because he's really freaky and, you know, he's familiar with Pasqualoni. And John Miller made Bruce Feldman's freak list at the beginning of last season because apparently he's like incredibly strong. So, you know, there's a couple guys to watch, but really my money is on Kearney being the guy who ends up, having a spotlight shined on him in camp.
All right. We're going to talk about a couple of the questions for the last few minutes here. Lines 99 has a question. Could you elaborate on how Quinn scouting for a scheme is familiar with changes things?
I mean, the big thing is he's more successful because he's more familiar, right? He was kind of a fish out of water trying to implement his system with his scheme and the scouts that he wanted for a defensive scheme with Terrell Austin that he was unfamiliar with. And you saw him kind of hit and miss on some of these players where those players might have fit into this scheme a lot better than they fit into Terrell Austin's. Like, for example, Antoine Williams played 1 year for the in Austin scheme, looked pretty good, and then was cut and didn't make the team as a second year player. He was 6'3", 247 pounds. He probably fit really nice into this scheme, but he didn't fit into that scheme. And so you saw him kind of like trying to force some square pegs into round holes the first two seasons. And some of these guys that I think really just didn't fit the 4-3 would probably have done really well if Patricia and his scheme were around the whole time.
All right, Shaky44's question. After watching Quinn sign Marvin Jones, release Golden Tate, those trade him, yeah, and draft Galladay and Fulgham, I wonder how much he cares about wide receivers who get separation. Seems more interested in ball skills. Agree.
Yeah, I mean, ball skills is really his key. He wants it on both sides of the ball. And I think separation is key. I don't think he's avoidant of it. I just think he hasn't really had an opportunity to add a receiver that has the separation skills that Golden Tate has. He's tried to. That's why he brought Amendola in, right? But I just think the things haven't lined up really well for him to get the guy that he wants that has that kind of whole package.
Jimmy asks, additionally, many people are, he had a previous question of that, many people are arguing that the Lions only picked up one true starter in TJ, sure, instead added depth. If that's true, why might that be more of a positive than a negative?
Well, because you have holes that you've filled in with other guys. Like, you don't want to draft three starters every year. Like, the goal is to draft three guys that can eventually start every year, but you don't want to draft three guys that are going to start every year because that means the guys on your roster aren't as good. So if you only got one starter out of this class, it's because your other guys are better. Now, I think there's other guys on this roster that could eventually start. Let's say in 2020, you could see Tavai, Harris,
Hockenson.
Well, Hockenson, obviously.
Oru Warrior.
That's what the name I was blanking on there for a second. Thank you. They can all end up starting, and that's fine if they win those starting jobs, but they shouldn't be starting day one in camp, or it means that the rest of your roster is really not as good.
All right. Hail Mary and Steven Misilowski have similar questions. I'll just go with Hail Mary's question. Offensive guard was not fully addressed in the draft.
Sure.
Do you see any prospects in free agency, or will we look to pick up an undrafted free agent like Ben Shaw? Do you think Sue is a possibility for – oh, this is a separate question. It's a possibility for a one-year deal to solidify the defensive line. Two-parter.
I don't think Sue's in the conversation. Right. I don't think – I know there's lots of questions. He's not in the conversation either. So Sue and Ansa aren't going to be coming back to Detroit. As far as guards and centers, I don't know if Quentin Spain is still out there. He's a guy who was really good a couple years ago, had a down year last year. He would fit the scheme if they want to add some more depth. I don't think they're going to push anything, though, right now. But if they added a guard, it's kind of slim pickings out there. But Spain makes a lot of sense to me, as long as he didn't sign somewhere and I missed it before the draft.
All right, Chris Saltz has an interesting question. What are the biggest glaring holes now after the draft, seeing as we filled holes at tight end, linebacker, defensive back, defensive end, running back, and wide receiver all through the draft and free agency?
Here's the thing. On the defense, they're too deep at this defense. They're at least too deep in every spot, and that's something you couldn't say before. I actually think the defense is in really good shape. If there's a glaring hole, it's at right guard. You don't have a supreme talent there, and you don't have a long-term option at the slot wide receiver. No matter how much you like Brandon Powell, he hasn't proved it yet. So that's another weakness there. And I think if you're going to be a run-first team, you could use a little bit more long-term depth at running back. I don't think Ty Johnson's the answer. I think he's a good player and he can do well, but I don't think he's going to be a 1B to carry on Johnson. So those are the three spots that I think the team is probably the weakest at.
All right. That's where we have to call it for today. So we do have shout-outs.
Yeah, a ton of questions we didn't get to, guys.
I
figured you wanted to spend a little bit more time learning about the players, but I'll try and get some of these questions on Twitter if I can.
They're mostly evergreen questions as far as this time of the season goes.
Right, and yeah.
We'll get to some of them next week.
Exactly, I think that's a great idea. We've seen nice uptick in our podcast, reviews as well.
Reviews are up to 80.
Yep.
180.
180.
Excuse me.
And so now we're clipping along. And let's see, who gave us some reviews? Don Valley 222, Slough Shark ND, Carter B. I think that's Carter. That's my guy Carter who lives in Florida, I think. 98, and then Tia Matt 74. All gave us some nice reviews, all giving us high ratings, which are really helping our cause. I know we missed our pre-draft podcast because of my near-death experience of illness.
You're in rough shape.
But we're going to get back into this regularly, and we'll do some more breakdowns. I'll save a lot of these questions for next podcast, and we'll break it down a little bit more. We can get to some more, position battles and stuff like that as we go. We're not going away. We still got a lot to cover over the spring and summer months here. So football doesn't stop here on the Detroit Lions Breakdown.
No. It goes full year, all year, every week.
Yep.
With some exceptions. yeah, that's going to be it for this week. Hopefully for the people out there rather downtrodden after what happened over the weekend, which I would guess there was more of...
Sure.
Than was expected, right? A little more anger than a lot of people would expect. Although, for the most part, most fans of teams hated their draft. And I think part of that is just people are too into it now. People follow it too closely, and they're just not going to like what they see just because they already have the idea in their head of what it's supposed to be.
You know, I saw a tone change after day two as opposed to after day three. A lot more positives after the whole draft was completed, rather than just what they had accomplished through the first 2 days.
But only time will tell.
Yep.
If the naysayers were right or the blue skies were right. And I kind of know what side it's going to be because there can only be one champion every year. Hey, but we got plenty of time to talk about that. So until that time, let's go Lions.